Folks, approaching July, 4 weeks from the start of Seahawk training camp. Yeah, you heard that right. Mariners showing a little bit of life. Kraken season one in the books. Let's break a bunch of it down with our man on the scene in Seattle. Great work for SeattleSports.com. Keeps us wired in down here. On Twitter, use the handle at the B Gustafson, Brandon Gustafson. How are you and the now one-year-old pup Mav doing?
Yeah, we're doing great. Just trying to stay cool. We're not used to the 90-degree weather up here, so these last few days have been a little much. But no, we're doing all right.
You know, I want to hit one general question about the Kraken. Obviously,
yeah, sure.
Results-wise, not what you would hope, but long-established teams, Montreal, Philly, had lesser seasons. But on the plus side, one of seven teams who basically sold out their arena. Basic evaluation, just how ignited were the fans in your city just getting to witness an electrifying sport like hockey, NHL, at its highest level?
Oh, yeah, no. Fans were stoked. I was able to go to a handful of games, both for work as well as just as a fan, kind of sitting in the stands and getting the lay of the land a little bit. And, no, it was really cool. A ton of sellouts. The energy was there. And especially, I think, in at the very beginning and then kind of in the second half of the season after the trade deadline, things started to click a little bit. The top prospect, Matty Beniers, debuted and played really, really well down the stretch. I think he had 10 points in his first 8 or 9 games, something like that. So a lot of excitement for the Kraken, and people are really excited to see what they can do going forward. And I know they have a lot of cap space and a lot of draft picks to play with, so people are really excited to see what they do this offseason heading into next year.
Let's get to the Seahawks. Tight end in particular, Gerald Everett, the top guy this year. Then the last couple years, kind of by committee, Will Disley, Jacob Hollister. No real reliable threat since Jimmy Graham back like 5 years ago. But now, Noah Fant, part of the Russell Wilson trade. You wrote about it, the interview with Michael Bumpus. Why are we thinking that he might be in line for a pretty big season?
Yeah, Michael Bumpus, and I definitely agree in that sense. The tight end position, kind of like you said, the last few years, it's been a lot of different names and things like that, really, since Jimmy Graham's last season here up in Seattle. But that's a position that they've invested a lot in, both in terms of free agency, trades, draft picks, and they just haven't quite been able to get that to click. And we saw flashes of it last year. And Shane Waldron, the offensive coordinator, comes from the Rams, and they utilized a lot of two tight end sets down in L.A. during his time there and as well as last year. And I think Noah Fant's going to get a lot of looks. And I think that having Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf on the outside, maybe taking some pressure off of him to kind of go out there and do his thing, is going to help a lot. Really good athlete, young guy, explosive for the tight end position while obviously being a pretty big-bodied guy. And I think another thing, too, is they're really going to emphasize some intermediate throws over the middle of the field, some things that Russell Wilson the last few years didn't really do, took a lot of deep shots. So I think that Noah Fant's going to get a lot of targets, a lot of love in this offense here at the start.
Yeah, we actually had a chance to have Michael on, and he's a really good analyst. And I noticed another piece you wrote was the focus on position coaches. Certainly the O-line has a new quarterback, couple of rookie tackles. But what about Carl Scott? You know, the secondary, I think they were next to last in passing yardage last year. He comes over from the Vikings. So, Brandon, what kind of task is he facing, and who might help him out?
Yeah, no, it's a tall task because not only, I mean, these last 3 years or so, the pass defense has been really bad. I mean, they would always kind of get it together towards the end of the season, at just not just pass defense, but defense as a whole. But I think at the start of both 2020 and 2021, they were on historically bad pace as far
right.
as the pass defense go. Just a ton of yards, some big plays, and that's always been something that's a big no-no for Pete Carroll is allowing those big plays over the top of the field, those big explosive plays on defense. So Carl Scott's got a tough task, and it'll be interesting to see what the cornerback position looks like because Trey Brown was a rookie last year, and he flashed in 4 or 5 games, but he's coming off of a pretty serious knee injury. They were able to re-sign Sidney Jones, who had a pretty decent season for us up here, but that was pretty limited sample size that you saw from him, and then they used two of their draft picks to bring in some corners, Kobe Bryant out of Cincy, Tariq Woolen out of UTSA down in Texas, and Carl Scott, young guy, energetic guy. I think he's a really thoughtful, well-spoken guy, just being able to listen to some of his press conferences. And you mentioned the Vikings last year. That was his first taste of NFL action. But before that, he was one of the top guys at Nick Saban's defense down in Alabama, leading the charge with those defensive backs. And obviously, that's a school that has some pretty dominating defenses over the last few years and has a lot of high draft picks, right? So you gotta like having a guy like that coming in. But that defensive coaching staff in general just looks a little different with him. They brought in Sean Desai as an associate head coach. He was the defensive coordinator for the Bears last year. And then Clint Hurt, who's been up here as the defensive line coach, he's calling the shots now. So got some young guys with some kind of different takes. Looks like they're shifting to more of a 3-4 look instead of the typical 4-3 that Pete's ran up here. So, yeah, the back end, I mean, you know your safeties are going to be in Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs, but really this kind of what the cornerback position ends up looking like is going to be really interesting to watch this season.
Talking with Brandon Gustafson, SeattleSports.com, to the Mariners just over a week ago, 10 under .500, swept the A's, 2 or 3 from the Angels. I know they just lost their first baseman, Ty France, for a bit, but I guess kind of an update. How long is he out? Who steps in? Because Brandon, he's been their best hitter this year.
Yeah, Ty France has had a fantastic season this year, and it's a grade 2 left elbow sprain, basically, is what they're kind of defining it as. And I think he was talking to reporters today, and Scott Service, the manager, was talking to reporters today. He's trying everything he can to be off of the injured list after the minimum 10 days. So that would be a big help. And in his absence, it's going to be kind of a little bit of everything. They've had a few utility guys, Dylan Moore, Kevin Padlow, Abraham Toro, have kind of filled in at first base at times in the last few days. They made a trade today for Carlos Santana. I know I saw you tweet about that earlier. always funny there. But, yeah, Carlos Santana is probably going to come in, be a first base DH-type option for this team, veteran guy. You kind of know what you're going to get there. But Ty France, I mean, getting him back as soon as possible is going to be huge too, because as we all saw yesterday, hitting the media waves, the Mariners got into a little bit of a brawl, and I think that you're going to be seeing a few guys getting some suspensions here, and who knows how long that's going to be. So getting Ty France back sooner the better in case some of those suspensions bleed over into the next week or two.
Yeah, for those who didn't get the hint I threw out there, I was like, 60s guitarist Carlos Santana. I was like, it's Seattle. It's got to be Jimi Hendrix. But
that's right.
Anyway, to Julio Rodriguez, who you brought up before he even took the field, and bit of a rough April, better in May, more consistent June. The on-base percentage is up, more patient at the plate. And Brandon, let's not forget, he's 21, but
oh yeah,
his glove, speed on the bases. I mean, not only what we're seeing, but what's coming from this young guy, because, man, he's just so fun to watch.
Yeah, he's a five-tool guy. And coming up through the minors and when they first signed him, just a big-bodied guy. You know, he's 6'4". I think he's about 230 now. So everybody's looking in the sky like, okay, that's going to be a power corner outfielder, right? Obviously, up here the last few years in Julio's first taste of minor league action, we had Nelson Cruz, who was more of a DH at that point of his career, but had come up as just kind of a power-hitting corner outfielder. I think a lot of guys just kind of tabbed Julio as that, and then all of a sudden he comes up and makes his debut, and you're like, oh my gosh, this guy can stick in center field, and all of a sudden he's leading MLB in stolen bases. Like, no, we all knew the power was going to come, the hit tool. He was a great minor league hitter. I think he was a career, like, .332 minor league hitter or something like that. So not just a big sellout for power guy, but all of a sudden you're seeing him in center field. He's taking good routes. He's fast. He makes really good decisions out there. He's aggressive and executes well on the bases. It's just been super, super fun to watch, and just a dynamic personality, and he loves the spotlight, and he's made for it, the big smile and everything. So he's exceeded, I think, a lot of people's expectations, probably not his own, because he knows what he can do. But yeah, after that month of April where just not a whole lot was clicking for him, May and June, he's been on fire, and it's been really fun to see this guy go from the young 21-year-old hitting 7-8 in the lineup to all of a sudden he's hitting 2-3-4 for this team with a lot of pretty good bats every single night.
By the way, one of the reasons we have Brandon on is for his knowledge. His career batting average, you nailed. in the minor leagues. I just I looked it up while we were talking, and I was like, because I knowing you, I had a feeling you were going to be spot on. So well done there.
Thank you.
couple final thoughts for Brandon Gustafson, SeattleSports.com. Logan Gilbert, of course, showed real promise as a rookie last year. I mean, in September, he had a 2.7 ERA. You know, this year, really just one sort of shaky start against Philly. I know Robbie Ray has been the offseason story, but fair to say, Gilbert's really been kind of the anchor and the rock of that starting rotation.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned Robbie Ray with that too, Steve. Shannon Dreyer, our Mariners insider, she had a story the other day because this rotation's been on a historic run as far as the franchise goes. I think it's 23 starts in a row with three earned runs allowed or less from the starters. They've just been pitching great, and you'd think that a rotation that has a guy like Robbie Ray, reigning Cy Young Award winner, and Marco Gonzalez, who's a proven veteran, those would kind of be the guys leading the charge, but Robbie told Shannon, like, hey, we're looking at what Logan's doing, and we're all just trying to kind of replicate that. And the guy's 25 years old. It says a lot about what he's been doing. But pounding the zone, he's got a great fastball. And the thing last year, Steve, was he has the great fastball, but really last year that's all he had. He was really inconsistent with his slider, his curveball, his change. They flash at times, but just weren't there enough to be super reliable. He was so fastball heavy. And he still leans on that fastball a bit, but the slider, it's a little more firm. It's a little more like a cutter, but it's more consistent that he's able to mix in the curveball and actually get some swings and misses with it. The changeup's been a really good weapon for him against left-handed pitching. So just seeing that development from year one to year two, I mean, that's a massive jump that he's taken. I mean, I think everybody kind of expects, especially if he's able to get back and healthy, that Ty France is going to be a representative for this team at the All-Star game down in L.A. But Logan Gilbert, I mean, I think he's been one of the top 10 to 15 best and most valuable starting pitchers in baseball. And that's a huge leap for a guy that, I mean, he had his moments last year. It was a little inconsistent, but he finished really strong. I don't think anybody saw him making that big of a leap right away. And it's just been really fun to see.
The last thing is, I feel like, you know, Seattle has been kind of reliever out of nowhere central. Drew Steckenrider last year, now Penn Murphy, who was a 33rd round pick 4 years ago, converted infielder in college, made his MLB debut this April. I mean, he's only been hit badly once over, I think, his 26 appearances. So what about his performance in stabilizing a bit of bullpen that's been more middle of the road this year as opposed to the top 10 group it was last year?
Yeah, that's another one that I don't think – if you would have told me Penn Murphy's going to come out this year and be their best reliever, I'd have been like, what? What are you talking about? You brought up these 33rd-round draft picks. They don't even have the 33rd round anymore. They limited it down to 20. I mean, this guy wouldn't have been drafted coming out of college. Now it's been really cool to see. I know that he's a pretty cool, interesting guy. He kind of calls himself like a hippie cowboy, I think. He's on the mound, and he's high 80s with a really good sweeping slider, but he's a little funky, and he's just able to avoid barrels, and he just never gets hit hard. He's able to get some swings and misses, a lot of weak contact, and he's another guy that just kind of pounds the zone. And like you said, it seems like it's every year that they just have that one reliever that kind of comes out of nowhere and stars for them. And this year it's Penn Murphy as a rookie, and I think if you probably go and look at all the relievers in baseball, he's probably been among the best 20 to 25 guys for the entire year, and he didn't make his debut until I think the beginning of May. it's been really cool to see. I'm always a fan of, especially in today's age where you have relievers like Andrés Muñoz coming out and throwing like 102 like it's nothing, and then it's like, okay, yeah, but here's our best reliever. The guy's thrown 88 with the sweeping slider. Good luck. So cool little contrast there, and yeah, it's been really cool to see.
Yeah, how dare he, folks?
Yeah, right.
he's Brandon Gustafson, Seattle Sports, 7:10 a.m. online. Check out all the great coverage, SeattleSports.com. Follow along on Twitter. Use the handle at the B Gustafson. BG, best to Mav. And as always, appreciate your time and up close and personal insight. Be well, and as always, look forward to catching up soon.
Yeah, appreciate it, Steve. Take care.
All right, take it easy.